Good morrow!
This is Allison.
And this is Beverly.
Welcome back to
Shaky Understanding.
This week we're talking about Othello. Another pretty famous Shakespeare play, okay? Yeah. One of the most well-known.
We haven't really gotten into the weird ones yet.
Truth.
Soon.
Soon times. Soon. Get ready. You want to give us some Shakespeare overage?
Yeah. So, Othello, we start out and we see Iago and Rodrigo, his friend. And Rodrigo complains to Iago that he loves Desdemona. And Iago's like, don't worry, we'll get her, buddy. And he goes, but I think Othello, the Moor, which is another word for a black person, is marrying her tonight. Let's go tell her father, because her dad doesn't know. And so they run and tell her dad, and her dad's like, what? This is crazy! And Iago really builds it up. You can really see Iago's craft behind exactly how he's telling Desdemona's father to make him angry about it. And Desdemona's father rushes out of his house and confronts Othello about it. Meanwhile, Othello is like, I'll be happy to talk to you about it, but I gotta go to this cabinet meeting thing. And so he confronts him at this meeting where they're discussing that the Turks are coming to invade Venice. Othello is a high-ranking officer in the armies. And part of the reason Iago is so angry is because Othello has just promoted Cassio into the lieutenant position, which is how they said it in the play, I don't know. And Iago is a really low rank of an ensign, and he's jealous. That's part of his character. He has many motives, that's just one. And so Desdemona's father bursts into the room and accuses Othello of stealing his daughter in the night and using witchcraft on her to woo her. And Othello explains that he just told her his life stories and she fell in love with him by taking pity on him. And Desdemona comes in herself and says the exact same thing and says that she loves him truly and that Othello is so virtuous, she was wooed by him. And everyone knows Othello and knows that he's a good person and he's this great captain. And so the Duke is like, I think there was no witchcraft here. And basically tells her father that Othello and her were wed legally and they should stay together. And so her father's really angry though, and he basically says, like, good luck in life, peace out, dips. So then Othello goes to the wars and says, Desdemona, you should come over and hang out in Cyprus during the wars, it'll be great. And she's like, okay, which, weird. But, so they cut to later the wars, and there's this big storm, and Othello had been out to sea, and Desdemona had been coming to the Isle of Cyprus to come spend some time there, and there's a big storm, they're not sure if he's gonna live or not, and Desdemona comes there first, and she's really worried, and then he shows up, and they embrace, and they're all happy to see each other. Iago rings Rodrigo and says that he has plans to undo the Moor, basically, and he's going to lay a plot to entrap him in some sort of jealousy. He sees Cassio and Desdemona talking to each other very closely before Othello gets there, and they're just talking about him coming, and he says, I'm gonna make Othello believe that she and him are doing it, cuckolding him, so to speak, which means cheating on him in olden days. In the tavern that night, Cassio tells everyone that he's a lightweight, basically, and can only drink one flagon of wine. And of course, Iago's like, no, you should drink more, have some more. And he keeps singing these songs, and Cassio is entranced by his songs and ends up drinking. And he becomes really drunk and ends up trying to fight everyone. And Rodrigo comes in and challenges him for, like, Desdemona, I guess, for whatever reason. And Cassio ends up fighting him, and he's so drunk, he, like, can't stop himself. And Othello ends up breaking up everyone's fight and demotes Cassio there. And he's fallen from grace, and Cassio's so upset, and he goes to Iago for help. He's like, what shall I do? And Iago's like, go to Desdemona and ask her to ask the Moor for forgiveness for you. And you should just visit with her a lot so that she can continually try and get Othello to like you again. He's like, that's a great idea, thank you. He goes out of the room and everyone's gone, and Iago's like, this is perfect because I gave him the right advice, but really it's gonna screw him over in the end. And so Iago then goes to work on Othello and starts feeding him all these lines of, like, it's terrible to be jealous, right? And Othello's like, yeah, weird thing to say, thank you. And then he's like, hey, Cassie is hanging out with Desdemona a lot, huh? And Othello's like, what? And then Iago's wife, Emilia, is, like, handmaiden to Desdemona, and they're really good friends. And Emilia and Iago have this weird relationship where she's always trying to impress him, and he doesn't really seem to give her any affection back. So Desdemona drops her handkerchief, which is really particular to her. It was Othello's handkerchief given to him by his mother. It's very special to him, and it was the first gift he gave to Desdemona when he wooed her. She drops that specific handkerchief, and Emilia picks it up and says, Iago really wanted this. Don't really know why. And then Iago comes in, and they have this flirtatious scene where she says, I'll give it to you, and then he goes, thanks, and then just dips. And she's sort of left like, And so he plants that handkerchief in Cassio's house, and Cassio just thinks it's, like, a mistake. Like, he doesn't know why he has it, and ends up trying to give it to this whore, Bianca, who is, like, in love with him, and he thinks it's really funny that she's in love with him, which is super messed up, in my opinion. But, she really loves him, and so she's always chasing him around. So he's like, here, you can have this pretty handkerchief. Will you make me a copy? I really like it. I don't know where it came from. And she's like, how could you cheat on me? And he's like, you're a whore. And I also didn't. But Othello sees it and sees him give it to the whore, and he thinks, like, he's sleeping with Desdemona. That's the only answer for why he would have that handkerchief. And he thinks of her so little that he's just going to give that token away to a whore. And he's just, like, filled with this crazy jealous rage. And there's even a scene where it says that he has, like, an epileptic fit when he's, like, in, like, the seat of his jealousy. So there may even be some link to some disease part of it, too. Now Othello, like, truly believes that Desdemona and Cassio are cheating. And Iago convinces him that he'll ask Cassio for a confession if Othello just hides behind an heiress. Good things always happen when you hide behind an heiress in Shakespeare plays, by the way. So this is just one other example of that. And
is that sarcasm?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Because in Hamlet, Polonius hides behind an heiress and is stabbed to death while listening to Hamlet and Gertrude talk.
Can you tell me what you mean by an heiress?
Like a pillar.
Great. I'm thinking of, like, let me hide behind this woman who's said to inherit a lot of money.
Oh my god, I'm so sorry.
And I'm real confused over here. Wow.
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 What a time to be alive. Word of the day. So Othello hides behind a pillar, or an heiress, and I might be making that definition up. I think that's what it means. Othello hides behind a pillar and listens in, and Iago knows that Cassio always giggles when he talks about Bianca, which is, like, such a great character trait, first of all. And so he questions him about Bianca and says, like, well, she's a wild one, eh? Basically, like, guy talk. And Cassio is all giggly, and Othello thinks that they're talking about Desdemona. Iago, like, disguises that he's talking about Bianca and says that in a lower voice, or there's other ways to do it on stage, but it just confirms what Othello fears. So Othello commands Iago to murder Cassio, and Iago says, you should murder Desdemona, and Othello's like, yeah, can you get me some poison? And Iago's like, no, you should smother her in her marital bed where she cheated on you at. Othello's like, yeah, you're right. That's a great idea. I'm going to do that instead. I'm holding my hands up in disbelief right now. Like, why? Anyway, Iago, ever one to not do his own dirty work, convinces Rodrigo to come and attack Cassio with him. And so they go and they have this fight in the pitch black night, so it's hard for them to see. And Cassio, he ends up mortally wounding Rodrigo. And Iago, seeing it happen and knowing Cassio wasn't wounded, Iago, ever the dick, stabs him from behind. And it doesn't kill him, though. But Iago runs out so that he can run back in with a lantern when two other lords find the two bodies there. He comes in with a lantern and, like, his pajamas and is like, oh, what's going on over here? And blames it all on Rodrigo, And he goes to check Rodrigo, and Rodrigo's like, oh my god, help me. And he stabs him to death right there and smothers his mouth so he can't tell them that Iago was in on this plot with him. And he says, this one over here is dead, but there must be other people that got away that tried to kill Cassio here. It must be Bianca. And then, but they never really follow through on that whole blaming Bianca thing.
She probably went to hide behind an heiress.
Then we see Desdemona is being dressed by Emilia in her, she has put her wedding sheets on her bed and is so confused as to why Othello's been so jealous of her and claims that she is a whore and that she's been cheating on him and she cuckolded him, which she knows is not true. And Emilia is dressing her for bed and they have this beautiful scene where Emilia's like, if women cheat, it's because men taught us how to. And they screw us over and they do all this stuff. And I think Othello's being a dick and you shouldn't take it. Which is basically what she leaves her with. And then she's like, all right, have a nice night. And closes the door. And then Othello comes into Desdemona and he starts saying, like, make your peace with heaven because you're going to die. And she's like, whoa, hold up. Why? And wherefore? And they have this whole scene where she's so clearly being virtuous and he just thinks they're lies and he can't. He's so blind with jealousy that he can't see that she's being honest. And she's even like praying and saying, he's saying like, swear to heaven, damn yourself here. And she's like, I swear that I'm virtuous and that I didn't cheat on you. And he's like, how can you say that to heaven? She's like, because it's true. And he ends up smothering her. And right as he does this, Emilia is coming to bang on the doors because she's realized Iago has some part in this. And she's banging on the doors trying to stop him from making this mistake. And he's like, just a minute. And then he opens it and Desdemona is dead in her bed. So we think. And Emilia is like distraught beyond all belief and tells him that he's been tricked and that she was never cheating on him. And Desdemona even comes back to life for a second and has this parting thing with Emilia. And she's like, Emilia's like, who did this to you? And Desdemona looks over at Othello and is just like, no one did this. And then she dies. And Othello's like, see, she said I didn't do it. So like, also don't blame me. But Emilia knows what happened. And Iago comes in with Cassio. And basically all of the plot is slowly but surely revealed. Emilia puts together two and two and realizes that Iago's been planting these seeds in Othello. And Cassio never was cheating with Desdemona. Which Emilia would know, she was with Desdemona a lot. The handkerchief comes up during all this revealing, and Emilia says, oh my god, Iago took that from me. I found it. You dropped it with Desdemona like 2 weeks ago, and I picked it up and gave it to Iago, and he planted it on Cassio. He was never given it by Desdemona. You fool, basically. And then Iago tries to kill Emilia right in front of everyone. And she's like, oh no, you're not stopping this train. And she keeps telling him, she's like, you did this wrong, you messed up. And then he finally does get to her and he stabs her and kills her in front of everyone. Basically admitting that everything she said is true. And Othello is just brokenhearted. And he admits to what happened and says, like, you guys can take me in. Just when you tell people what happened, please tell them the truth. Don't exaggerate anything. And he has this whole speech to this guy and ends up taking his weapon from one of the dukes that are there witnessing all this and stabs himself in front of everyone and kills himself. And Iago is just like laughing, basically, just seeing the whole wreck of life that he just left happen. Mm-hmm. And he's basically dragged off to the corpse.
Cassio comes in, right?
Cassio's there the whole time. Mm. He's watching this whole thing happen. He says, like, I knew he would kill himself, but I didn't think he would because he didn't have a weapon. But he stole a weapon from one of them dukes.
And that's
the end. Everyone, no, not a lot of happy endings in this one.
Nope.
Mostly sad ones.
Sweet.
Wow.
Well, I'm a little bit scared for my life today because we've got Iago here with us.
Hey!
As our guest.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So I have just some questions.
Sure.
At least in my text that I was reading, they keep referring to these people as being an ancient or his ancient.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Ancient's a rank in the military.
Cool. cool.
Ancient is like a is a position.
Do you know, are you familiar with today's military terms? Do you know what it would be like equivalent to? Is it like a captain or a general?
Well, I'm not too caught up in modern military, but I think it's somewhere relatively low.
Here's a question that I had a lot while reading over your story. Iago, can you just talk a little bit about why you don't like Othello? What's your issue with him?
Yeah, you got a lot of beef.
Yeah, I get this question a lot. And the way I put it, it's the way that he holds his cards, I say. And let me explain. I've known this man, Othello, for 10 years or so. Long time. And when you're with someone for a very, very, very long time, the little things that they do start to wear on you. The way that they answer questions, the way that they walk, the way that they hold their cards can even be maddening.
Mm.
And all of this time around, this brilliant general, you really, really start to see his flaws. And you start to see all these frustrating things that he does. And then there's, you know, he may have slept with Amelia. I don't know. I'm not really on very good terms with her. Her and I don't communicate very much. There's the whole him promoting Cassio when Cassio's pretty much an arithmetician who's never seen a battle. But Othello seems like it's really okay to hire this man to be a lieutenant who has no military experience. Mm. So that's annoying. There's a lot of things. All so you, contributing.
So you feel like you didn't get the respect that you deserve from Othello ever?
No.
You did a lot of work for him, and he never really paid you back.
Very long relationship, and it never really seemed to pay off.
But I would say your reputation of doing a lot of work for him is very important to you.
Sure, I've worked very, very hard to maintain this persona of honesty and hardworking. And I'm a man who can get things done. And I had assumed that that would work for me in my career in the military, but it hasn't really worked out that way so far.
And you definitely had that reputation for honesty. We were discussing that one of the things that describes you the most in this play in particular is people call you honest all the time.
Sure, because it's true.
Right as you're lying to their face?
The trick is they don't need to know that you're arguing with them. At the time. The thing that I think is just so much fun is arguing with someone and manipulating someone without them even having the faintest idea that any of that's going on with them.
You say at one point in the stories that we have from your life that reputation is a false imposition. I wonder almost if that's sort of your personal motto, because your story seems to so much be about reputation and the deceit that reputation can be. If you believe someone to be very honest because of their reputation that they've built up, but that may not be, their reputation may not be fact.
Sure, it's so easy to create a sort of persona for yourself. Mm. And, you know, you get enough people to believe this persona, and that suddenly becomes a part of who you are. And it doesn't necessarily reflect truly on you, but it reflects truly to everybody else.
I had a question for you, and this is something that's occurred to me more now that I'm meeting you in person.
Sure.
I feel like you are probably an extremely smart person.
I like to think so.
And do you ever think that other people are just very stupid and naive?
Oh, yeah.
And you like to play with them?
Oh, yeah. And it makes things a lot easier. And it's honestly a lot more fun when someone will take what you say at face value without thinking so much of the consequences of what you say. And it really makes it easy for them to fall into these machinations. I mean, Amelia, bless her heart, she never once really asked why I wanted that handkerchief. And of course, I always knew why I wanted the handkerchief, and I asked her for it hundreds of times. Oh my God, I asked her all the time. And she always said, okay, sometime. Mm. And she finally did. And it took her to the very bitter end to realize what that was for.
I feel like in an alternate universe,
Han Solo is Iago. But luckily, in this universe, he stayed being good. No, think about it. I mean, Han shoots first. Let's be real.
I don't think so.
If he didn't marry Princess Leia and get some good influence from Luke and the Jedi, Han and Chewie flying around? Come on. Iago and Rodrigo, you don't see it?
No, I think Han relies more on his bravery and luck than subterfuge.
That's true. Than in the savviness. That's true.
I sure don't know who any of these people are, but I assure you I would never shoot anyone first.
He gets everyone to do his dirty work. Pardon this phrase.
Right. I don't necessarily think it's dirty work. I think it's doing the work that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't need to do any of this myself. I don't need to implicate myself in any of these crimes when there's so many people that are perfectly willing to do it for me.
Going back to playing with people who are less smart
than you. Sure, sure, yeah.
You even refer to Rodrigo as your fool at a certain point, and you have...
Yeah, he...
I mean, everybody needs a fool. Respect.
Respect.
Respect, yeah. He's kind of a lame kind of sidekick who
thinks he's a main character.
Right, he thinks he's
the superhero.
Yeah, he thinks he's this powerful, gallant, wealthy, eligible bachelor, and it's so easy to play on his perception of who he is, and it's so easy to play that against him.
Mm. Did you have an end goal in mind when you put all of this into motion? Did you just want to be promoted? Did you want respect? I mean, you're clearly very smart. What was sort of your end plan?
Well, initially I wanted Othello to suffer.
Mm.
And as things went on in my life, I realized that through Othello suffering and eventually being killed, I could inherit his position on Cyprus.
Mm.
And then he gets this letter saying that he's being called back to Venice, and Cassio was then going to take this position that I was seeking. So then I had to kick this plan into overdrive and get this taken care of before he leaves. Because I knew once he left that I would lose my opportunity to end this man. So I decided that it was more important to me to deal with Othello rather than becoming this general. That's what was important to me. Is getting back at this man.
Who's tortured you for 10 years.
Yeah.
Harbored a lot of resentment.
Yeah.
There are some that say you have a sort of obsession with Othello, bordering on even, like, romanticism, that you might have romantic feelings for Othello. I don't know if you can speak to this.
I think it's people looking for a way to weaken the person that I am.
Oh.
I think it's people trying to act like all this comes out of affection, and I think that would weaken my reputation, that would weaken how I look in other people's eyes, and I think that's people looking for a way to slander me.
You do, I believe, reveal to Othello at one point that Cassio is having some dreams in which he's speaking about Desdemona, but he kisses you in that dream. So you do make a good point, and you don't have a great relationship with Emilia.
I don't
wish to anger you.
No.
Of course.
No. You're touching on a few things. Okay, when you're in the military in a position like that, sometimes you gotta share a bed. You know, you gotta share a bed. That's how it is. You know, times are tough. And yeah, Cassio and I had shared a bed. And yeah, he started kissing on me in this dream, which, you know, was weird. But I knew that this would play exactly into what I needed to do.
Mm.
And then as for my relationship with Emilia, we fight a lot. We've been in a relationship a long time. We fight a lot. It's a relationship.
Did that dream actually happen, or did you make that up for Othello's ears?
Well, is Othello going to be hearing any of this?
No.
Then no, it's all made up.
Nice.
Fair. One thing I wanted to talk about is I think, as we just stated, you adapt very well to whoever you're talking to. Mm-hmm. And in the text, you can see this in, you switch between verse and prose a lot. And oftentimes you're speaking prose to those that are a lot dumber than you.
Mm-hmm.
Rodrigo, mm-hmm. I think even Amelia.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But every time you talk to Othello, you're like, verse, you're in verse. And Desdemona too, because you need them to think that you're respectable
sure.
and smart
mm.
so that they trust you. Whereas Rodrigo, you just want him to get on your side
mm-hmm.
and not be suspicious
mm-hmm.
of you. You don't want him to really think too hard on you.
The thing with Othello is it was important to me to convince him of my highborn status, my honesty, my trustworthiness, which goes with that sort of aristocratic speech.
Mm-hmm.
With Rodrigo, with Amelia, I don't need to convince him of that.
It occurred to me while reading your story, sort of the difference between wisdom and honesty. It's a very sort of broad philosophical notion that came into my mind, but there is, and you seem to say at some points that this is wise versus this is honest.
You're speaking to the scene where he tells Othello, like, she's cheating on you, but you're mad at me now. It was wiser for me to not say anything and not be honest rather than be honest.
But you're not really being honest, so is there some wisdom in your dishonesty?
I think the relationship between wisdom and honesty is I think it's wise to know when someone is being honest.
Ooh.
And it's these plots that I've laid have really showed people around me to not be quite as wise as I am.
Ah. Hmm. However, although you think of him as quite foolish, I would say the only person that seems to figure out that you're not honest is Rodrigo, who does come in and say, hey, this isn't really making sense anymore.
Right. The thing with Rodrigo is I had expected things to work out better for him earlier. Him and I were plotting to get Desdemona a while back. I had assumed it would work out, and it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my fault. And I apologized to him. It was messed up. But then I saw that when Othello was sent to Cyprus, that would be the way for things to work out for him. But, yeah, he had reason to be distrustful in that my ideas weren't really working out that well. But they, you know, I think they worked out, you know, pretty well in the end. Not for him. I mean, let me be clear. Things do not go well for him.
Right, you sunk your knife into his chest.
I sunk, well, he was going to talk.
Right.
And I couldn't have that happen. But things worked out eventually.
Even for you, would you say? I mean, you do kind of get what you want, not all the way,
sure.
but Othello certainly
sure.
does suffer
at,
in the end.
At a certain point, it became less about my own well-being, my own safety, my own quality of life, and it became more about making Othello suffer.
Hmm. I do have a question. Did Shakespeare say things like gnawing your lip because actors didn't do it, or so that they would? Because remember when I was talking about Sarah Siddons
right.
and her performance and wanting to come in and actually set the candle down and actually rub her hands together, and no one had done that previous to her. So does he say, oh, and then she comes in and Lady M is saying, oh, I'm rubbing my hands together. Do you see what I'm asking?
Yeah, I do. I think the answer is, as a playwright, he's doing what he can to describe the actions of someone in this state of mind. The same way you'd see in a screenplay, certain actions on the page.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, clearly there's other things that happen in the actual performance of it, but those clues in the script influence those choices in the performance later.
Mm. Cool.
Yeah.
Also, I guess, you know, in the Globe, maybe if you're audience member number 475 rather than audience member number 6, you might not be seeing the actors' faces so clearly.
Right.
I think I just answered my own question.
Cool.
Great. Gold star?
Gold star.
Woo!
It's been a while.
It's been a while. I gotta fill up that chart.
Bring that joke back in. Put it right in there.
I gotta get my free ice cream.
Yeah.
Cool. I think that was really most of my questions and my thoughts. I just want to say I really enjoyed this play way more than I thought that I would. The first act is a little bit slow, and the start of the second act is also a little bit slow. But once the handkerchief plot picks up, it really does read like a screenplay. I just saw everything unfolding in my head. It's very fast-paced, and it draws you in. I would love to see this performed.
For this week's technical aspect, I just wanted to do some research because history is my mulligan subject. I didn't really know sort of the state of Black people in Britain at the time. First of all, the term Moor, not really a thing we hear anymore. And I looked up the Oxford English Dictionary definition, and the definition actually changed a couple of times. At first, it meant a native or resident of ancient Mauritania, North Africa, which is now like Morocco and Algeria. And then later it meant specifically like Muslim, mixed person of like Berber and Arab descent from Northwest Africa. But basically it meant a dark-skinned person, usually Muslim. I think it's important that they call him Moor because it's so much of an outsider, because not only is he Black, but he's not Christian.
Yeah.
So in this time period in Britain, in like the 17th century, slavery wasn't widespread anymore, really. I think it was still around, but it was sort of coming out of being a thing. But Black people were still not really regarded as great people. They were definitely lower class. There were all of these rumors about them being savage, about being like witchcraft, like using dark arts, and all these associations with Blackness and evil. But at the time, there were also aristocrats who were Black that were coming into England. Like, there was one Moroccan ambassador, Abd Ed Quahad Ben Massoud, who visited during, like, 1600, and that would have been when the Lord Chamberlain's men were performing. Mm. So he might have, Shakespeare might have met this person and seen this, like, incredibly succinct Black man who's dealing with the aristocrats of the English and British Empire, and seen and taken his inspiration from him for Othello.
Interesting.
And then the other particular of this play is it's actually based on another play. A lot of Shakespeare plays are based off classics or other plays that were around at the time. And this one is almost like plot point for plot point, taken from something called Gil Hectomamithi by Giraldi Cinthio, who is a Italian poet and playwright. And it's basically the exact plot. There's just like two less characters.
Well, it does take place in Cyprus and Venice, so.
There you go.
There you go.
With that being the time period of like Black people not being seen as like people, they were more seen as savages and evil. Mm-hmm. This character would have been so different from what people would expect from a Black character. And it's in the title of the play. It's Othello, the Tragedy of the Moor of Venice. So people would go into this play knowing that there's going to be a Black character. And I think Shakespeare really writes him, though he has this whole jealous bout, he's truly virtuous and is just led astray by this other character. I think Shakespeare does this with characters that are seen to be either low class or bad, and give them some sort of redeeming characteristics to create a fully fleshed person.
Mm.
He does it later with another bastard, I think, in King John. I think he's a good bastard. And then we'll see later in Merchant of Venice, there are moments when Shylock is also, you can see all sides of him.
Cool.
The end.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
No, I like that a lot. Because it also is very interesting that at least in the United States, I remember in theater history class as well, it was actually quite a long time before Othello was played by an actual person of color. So probably played in blackface, or at least just people are like, yeah, he's Black.
Yeah.
That's also part of the historical context, is to realize that this wonderful character, who Othello would be a great character to play as well. I'd also play Amelia, because she's pretty badass in the final scene.
No, dibs on Amelia.
Fine. If I can be Iago, oh my god.
That would be so much fun.
Oh my god, it would be so good. We would bring down the house.
Burn it down the stage.
Boom. So.
Booked. Done.
Done. I'm ready. What was my point? Othello is a great character to play, was my point.
I think your point that you were trying to get to is that it must have been so frustrating for this great character that is supposed to be black to not be being played by black people. If you're an actor who's black and you're this amazing character, it would have been just heartbreaking to see someone blackface it.
Correct.
Luckily, that doesn't happen nowadays, as far as I know.
It happens with Asian characters.
Yeah, but I mean Othello.
Oh.
I don't think there's been a blackface Othello in a very long time.
I hope not.
I like to believe.
Let's maintain our innocence.
Yeah.
Are there some cool modern day adaptations?
Yes. So I have a great story about this.
Great.
I accidentally watched a modern day adaptation of Othello when I was like 8 years old because it just came on after the TV show I watched. It's called O. It's really good. I must have been older because I think I looked it up. It came out in 2008 or something. But okay. It's got Julia Stiles in it.
Nice.
I was too young for this movie though. And I watched the whole thing because I was just entranced by it. It's really good. It's like the modern adaptation is that they're all part of this really high-level basketball team in college. And, like, Iago or Hugo, a.k.a. Iago, doesn't get the position he wants or whatever on the team.
He's not point guard.
Whatever it is. And he, like, the plot follows. So I was this little kid watching this going, oh, this is so fun. Everyone's like, oh, she's in love with him. And they have like this beautiful scene between Desdemona and Othello. And then all of a sudden, like people start dying. And like Cassio gets murdered. The guy named Michael, who's the same actor who plays someone in 10 Things I Hate About You, which is another modern day adaptation of Shakespeare.
Yep.
So he, like, ends up dying, and then, like, Othello murders Desdemona in her bed, and I was like, what is this movie? And then Iago gets away with it and is, like, laughing and, like, goes plays basketball in a different school. And I was like, no one gets punished. Everyone good dies. I hate this.
It is a very unresolved ending, I will say. Usually, like, Tempest that we just read, which has a slightly happier ending, I'll grant you. But even Hamlet, and I feel like Lear has, like, a speech at the end. Doesn't Hamlet have a speech at the end?
I guess, yeah, there's closure.
There's, like, a little... It's not that it ends well, but someone sort of comes on stage and is like, hey, guys, so this is what happened, and, you know, please don't cry too much on your way home. And this, it's just kind of like, well, everyone's dead. I guess we just have to go tell the Senate.
Yeah.
Carry them away.
Yeah, dude.
Wah, wah. And it's a very unsettling ending.
Yeah.
Cool.
Another one is I saw a stage production of it at the National Theater in England, and it was set in, like, the Middle East War.
So, I was just going to say that'd be a cool adaptation if it hasn't been done.
Yeah, it's done all the time.
Yeah, of course, I'm sure.
But one choice that I really loved is everyone's in, like, fatigues, like camouflage, and when they're at war. So when they come to the Isle of Cyprus.
Right.
And so when Desdemona comes with Emilia, you see Desdemona in, like, a little white dress coming in, you know, amongst all these soldiers. Aww. They're like, hey, what up, girl? Because they all know her.
Right.
But what was really cool is Emilia was also in fatigues. So it was like she was part of the soldiers.
Yeah.
Which, like, speaks to her character and why she's so outspoken in the end. Is like, girl, if you cheat on a boy, it's because they cheat on you. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. Emilia is, I will say, I was kind of, like, blah about her until it gets to Act 5. And especially that final scene, she's just like, don't tell me to shut up. I'm going to say what I want to say. Suck it, Iago. I hate you.
I'm so sorry.
Sorry. Please don't kill us. Okay, are there other modern-day adaptations?
There's a couple movie versions. We were talking about blackface Laurence Olivier one.
Yep, well-known.
I haven't seen really any of the other movies,
I think there's
though.
A version where Anthony Hopkins... He might play Iago, but he might play Othello. I can't remember. I don't know. Cool. Well, Iago, thanks for spending some time with us.
Yes,
do you mind if we read a little scene together?
Oh, sure.
That won't offend your sensibilities?
No.
Okay.
So, we're going to read the scene from Act 1, Scene 3. This is right after Desdemona has told her father that the Othello wooed her. Well, that he wooed her, and she fell for him. She wasn't magicked into this wedding. And her father is, like, really upset, but he's like, whatever, and storms out. So this is a scene with no one's on stage except Iago and Rodrigo. And Rodrigo, like, realizing that he's not probably going to get Desdemona, is really upset and is trying to talk to Iago about it. So Allison's going to be Rodrigo, and Iago, you're going to be yourself.
Yeah.
Iago.
What sayest thou, noble heart?
What will I do, thinkest thou?
Why, go to bed and sleep?
I will incontently drown myself.
Right, if thou dost, I know shall never love thee after. Why, thou silly gentleman?
It is silliness to live when to live is torment, and then we have a prescription to die when death is our physician.
Oh, villainous! I have looked upon the world for 4 times 7 years, and since I could distinguish betwixt a benefit and an injury, I never found a man that knew how to love himself. Ere I would say I would drown myself for the love of a guinea hen, I would change my humanity with a baboon.
What should I do? I confess it is my shame to be so found, but it is not in my virtue to amend it.
Virtue! A fig! 'Tis in ourselves that we are thus, or thus. Our bodies are our gardens, to the which our wills are gardeners. So, that if we will plant nettles or sow lettuce, set hyssop or weed up thyme, supply it with one gender of herbs or distract it with many, either to have it sterile with idleness or manured with industry, why, the power and the corrigible authority of this lies in our wills. If the balance of our lives has not one scale of reason to poise another of sensuality, the blood and baseness of our natures would conduct us to most preposterous conclusions. But we have reason to cool our raging motions, our carnal strings, our unbited lusts, whereof I take this, that you call love, to be sect or scion.
It cannot be.
It is merely a lust of the blood and a permission of the will. Come, be a man. Drown thyself. Drown cats and blind puppies. I have professed me thy friend, and I confess me knit to thy deserving with cables of perdurable toughness. I could never better steed thee than now. Put money in thy purse. Follow thou the wars. Defeat thy favor with a usurped beard. I say, put money in thy purse. It cannot be that Desdemona should long continue her love to the Moor. Put money in thy purse. Nor he to her. It was such a violent commencement in her, and thou shalt see an answerable sequestrian. Put money in thy purse. The Moors are interchangeable in thy wills. Fill thy purse with money. The food that to him now is as luscious as locusts shall be to him shortly as acerb to Colinquidia. She must change for youth. When she is sated with the body, she will find the error of her choice. She must have change, she must. Therefore, put money in thy purse. If thou wilt needs damn thyself, do it a more delicate way than drowning. Make all the money thou canst. If sanctimony, in a frail vow betwixt an erring barbarian and a super-subtle Venetian, be not too hard for my wits and all the tribe of hell, thou shalt enjoy her. Therefore, make money. A pox of drowning thyself! It is clean out of the way. Seek rather to be hanged, encompassing thy joy, than to be drowned and go without her.
Awesome.
Cool. Thanks so much, Iago.
Yeah, thank you
for stopping by.
Yeah, of course.
I hope you enjoyed your time.
I did. Yes, it was great. Just great.
You're very charming. I can see.
Thanks. I try really hard, actually.
That's fair.
To be charming.
I'm Beverly.
This is Allison. Deuces, peasants! It's quite easy to play sociopaths because they have no emotions.
I was gonna say it's really hard for me. I find it very difficult.
Well, I mean, like,
Hufflepuff.